You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Good morning. It's 8:06. Glad you're here on Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie's on vacation. She'll rejoin us next week. If you want to get involved in the final hour of the program, why not? Jump on 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Be nice to Parker. He's going to answer the phones. You'll hear his lovely voice and then be nice to him because that's how you get to me. We start the top of the hour with some headlines. Let's go over to Iran, where we are in the seventh week of this war of choice. First thing we need to know is that two regional officials tell the Associated Press that the United States and Iran are signaling that they will hold a new round of ceasefire talks in Islamabad, as a fragile two-week truce was due to expire. Pakistan-led mediators received confirmation that the top negotiators will arrive in Islamabad early Wednesday. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to brief reporters. Now, Pakistan is preparing for a new round of talks, even after President Trump appeared to throw cold water on hopes for reaching an agreement to end the war. He told Bloomberg News yesterday that he is highly unlikely to renew the ceasefire set to expire Wednesday. I don't understand why he feels the compulsion to always make these bold claims when he's either on social media or in an interview, instead of trusting the diplomatic process. Nobody wants to come to a negotiating table when one of the parties has already made these kind of claims. But it's not going to change how he acts. It doesn't seem to be, in my opinion, a good way to hold negotiations. But what do I know? I'm a talk show host on a radio network in Wisconsin, and he's the most powerful man in the world. I think I have more sense. I got to be honest. I think I have more sense. All right. Iran's chief negotiator and parliament speaker wrote in a post on X yesterday that we do not accept negotiations under the shadow of threats. And the Islamic Republic has been preparing to reveal new cards on the battlefield. Oh, I guess they don't like negotiating under threats. Final headline from the war. Since the war started, fighting has killed at least 3,375 people in Iran and more than 2,290 people in Lebanon. Additionally, 23 people have died in Israel and more than a dozen in Gulf and Arab states, 15 Israeli soldiers in Lebanon, and 13 U.S. service members throughout the region have been killed. That is the price of this war, not counting the billions of dollars that we have spent. Well, that's headlines from the war. Now, how about some more a stuff you need to know?
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
We've been following this story since last week. Protesters advocating on behalf of beagles at a Wisconsin dog breeding facilities demanded a meeting with Governor Tony Evers at the state capitol yesterday. Hundreds of protesters gathered at the Capitol building to ask the governor and state lawmakers to take notice of the situation at Rigland Farms and force the release of the remaining 1,900 beagles in the facility. An activist said that after the clash between law enforcement, security guards, and animal rights activists over the weekend at Ridgeland Farm in Blue Mound, an anonymous donor pledged $1 million to purchase the remaining beagles. The farm has not publicly responded to that offer. The activist also said that people felt compelled to break into the facility because the plight of the dogs still housed there isn't being heard. Instead of protecting the farm on Saturday, law enforcement should have been taking stock of the condition of the animals inside, they said. Evers' office previously told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the state has exercised its authority over Ridgeland through a legal settlement requiring the facility to surrender its breeding license by July 1st. The sheriff's office previously had said that they had conducted and will continue to conduct inspections there along with state investigators. And as much as I protect a person's right to protest, once you cross the line and break the law, you can't expect the law enforcement agencies to be on your side. They have a job to do as well, even though we may not always agree with it. All right, some more stuff you need to know. We know there's a delegation heading to Islamabad. Did you know there was a high-level delegation that went to Cuba? Yes, a senior U.S. delegation met with Cuban government officials in Cuba as the Trump administration ramps up its efforts to pressure Havana into a deal as it continues to exert its economic chokehold on the island. It was one of the highest-level visits of U.S. officials in roughly a decade and comes as the president continues to raise the specter of potential military action on the island. It also comes as Cuba's economic crisis continues to deepen amid sharp restrictions, including on fuel from the U.S. administration. Cuba's president, meanwhile, has made increasingly defiant calls to resist U.S. military aggression in recent days. We talked about this the other day, how he was calling on all Cubans to stand up and fight against the possibility of a U.S. invasion. The senior State Department delegation, which visited the island in recent weeks, stressed that time was running out for Havana to make key U.S.-backed reforms before circumstances irreversibly worsen. That according to a State Department official on CNN. According to the State Department official, the U.S. delegation stressed Cuba's need to make significant economic and governance reforms to enhance competitiveness, attract foreign investment, and allow productivity. They discussed the proposal to bring Elon Musk's Starlink satellite internet to Cuba, as well as proposals to compensate U.S. people and corporations for confiscated assets and properties, something that would likely be welcomed by Cuban exiles living in the United States. This is, again, something that is clearly just a choice of this administration. Cuba has been down there doing what Cuba does since the 60s. There is no imminent threat from Cuba. It's part of the plan by this administration to control the entire Western Hemisphere. It doesn't surprise me, again, that Cuba is saying, keep your hands off of us. This is, and again, this does not, saying that does not back the Cuban regime that's in power. You can say, hey, you can't just go in and take over a country without saying, yes, there are problems in that country. That's part of what the MAGA crowd and the administration has confused with America. We are allowed to criticize the government and still love this country. But to them, it's an either-or proposition, and there is nothing either-or about it. You can do both, and you can say that it's not right to go after Cuba and still not think their government is treating their people well. But we are not the world's nanny, or are we? More stuff you need to know. Apple announced yesterday that John Ternus, an affable mechanical engineer who rose through the ranks of the company's hardware division, will be its next chief executive officer because Tim Cook is resigning, kind of. Ternus is currently Apple's senior vice president of hardware engineering. His appointment will take effect September 1st. Cook will transition to become the executive chairman, replacing longtime chair Art Levinson. Ternus is 50 years old. He steps into the shoes of two giants of American business, Steve Jobs, who led the invention of the most popular consumer product in history, and Cook, who squeezed so much profit from the iPhone that Apple became the world's most valuable company. Cook is going to be remembered for creating immense value. During his tenure, Apple's market value grew by nearly $3.7 trillion, surpassing the value created by any other American CEO in total dollars, except for NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang. Now, he will also be remembered for bending a knee to this administration, contributing $1 million to the inauguration, and giving Trump a gold desk plate. But that's not, I guess, business-related, so we don't bring that up. Now, here's the big question for Ternus. It's whether he can spark Apple's innovative fire, which some critics for years have said has been lost under Cook. The company's most successful products since the iPhone are AirPods earbuds and the Apple Watch, which are big business on their own, but they are nowhere near as successful as the iPhone. So we will see what Ternus does with the company. And it's true. You know, the iPhone, and I have an iPhone, full disclosure, I like my iPhone very much, but it hasn't really changed. And then the changes they have made have been very minor and very upsetting. Like taking a Parker, you may not remember, there used to be a button on the phone there.
I do remember the button, yes.
You remember the button. I didn't like you losing the button. And because I am old, now I have since changed my mind on this. But yeah. When they first took the headphone jack away, I was very upset because I was old school and I still used wired head earbuds or headphones or whatever you want to call it. And it's funny now, big headphones are coming back. They're all Bluetooth now. True. But the giant old school 1970s headphones that I used to have when I listened to my Kiss 8 tracks laying on my twin bed in my youthful domicile.
Lovely.
Yeah. All day, Parker. They had individual volume controls on each ear.
Ooh, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Sound design. Top of the line right there. The best no money can buy. But yeah, well, so those are coming back. But I was mad when they took away the button. Still kind of am. It took me a while to learn that because I'm old. And the headphone jack. But now I'm down with the headphone jack being gone because I'm all about wireless. I'm all about the Bluetooth headphones.
I'm the other way around, Brian. I want the headphone jack back. And I don't mind not having a home button.
Really?
Yeah. Cause I.
So why do you want the headphone jack back? This is interesting. You're a young man. I thought you would be all about the Bluetooth.
I am all about the Bluetooth. Don't get me wrong. I will, anytime I have an option, I'm going with Bluetooth. Yeah. However, to take away that possibility, I think, is just wild.
See?
And I understand the dongle. You can put it into the charging port and do
dongle.
The dongle.
Stop me with the dongle.
I know.
See, that's the other thing with
it
Apple.
It takes away your chance to be able to charge while listening through the headphone jack.
See, good point. Then you got to get a dongle with a splitter on it, which
and
that's
that,
too much.
Apple
that's
does.
How they get you. It's always the nickel and diming. That's the thing. All right, let's real quick. Dane County pulls their funding for Flock license plate cameras. Dane County supervisors have cut off funding for automatic license plate cameras, citing concerns about privacy and how that data is shared across the country. Thousands of police departments share information through a database maintained by the company Flock. These include license plate pictures snapped by Flock cameras. Those pictures are captured automatically, regardless of whether someone is suspected of committing a crime. Well, that seems fine, right? We're just taking everybody's picture. Officers don't need a warrant to search the Flock system. That does raise concerns about violations of people's Fourth Amendment rights, and that's what Madison resident Garrig Batista said at a board meeting last week. He said, even if the footage is called upon only for specific cases, the fact that it exists at all presents an opportunity for misuse by an ill-intentioned actor. He said, I don't think it takes much imagination to think of scenarios of targeted abuse by both individuals and vulnerable communities. That's true. The county supervisors voted 32-1 to cut the $80,000 that the sheriff's office had previously allocated for leasing the Flock cameras. As a result, officials expect the cameras to be gone after May 31st, which is when the country's current Flock contract ends. So Big Brother, one less step as we knock out the footing of Big Brother, but Big Brother is still there. Don't kid yourself. He will be coming back more and more. Okay, when we come back, should there be regulations on how advanced robotics are developed and used? That's a big question coming from a very specific and, might I say, creepy incident over the weekend that really reminds you that Skynet is going to be self-actualized and Soylent Green will be people. All of that coming up as the doomsday scenario continues. Here on Daybreak, I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Well, despite my very harrowing tease of this segment, that music makes me buoyant. It makes me feel joy. Thank you, Parker. I am Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak. Jamie is on vacation. She'll be back with us next week. Let me ask you this. Should there be any regulations on how advanced robotics are developed and used, or should we just let these companies build robots that one day will crush our necks under their metallic boots. That might be hyperbolic, but the answer, your opinion, I want to hear it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Parker, you're too young to remember probably the cartoon The Jetsons, where we met George Jetsons.
Yeah.
George Jetson, his boy Elroy, his daughter Judy, Jane, his wife. Da, 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 da. Point is, they had a robot maid in The Jetsons.
That sounds convenient.
It was very convenient. Now, it's set in the future, and they also had space cars, and they lived up in space.
Yeah.
He worked for Spacely Sprockets, all of that. Huh. Now that I've given an entire primer on The Jetsons, let me get to the point of this story. Robots are making advancements that are, at one moment, very exciting and cool to see. But then when you take a step back and think about it, I don't know. Have you seen that Boston Dynamics robot dog?
The robot dog.
The robot dog. There are some days, I'll be honest, I wish I had a robot dog instead of my real dogs because I could just unplug it and have a little peace and quiet. Not all the time. Just every once in a while, a robot dog. Or a robot dog just to intimidate them into silence. I'll keep my regular dogs and I'll add a robot dog to the mix and see how they fare with that. Well, I don't know if you've seen this footage. It's wild. On Sunday, an android outpaced an entire field of human beings to run a half marathon faster than even the quickest human man or woman. Lightning. He is a running robot developed by Chinese smartphone maker Honor, finished the 21-kilometer run in Beijing in a stunning 50 minutes, 26 seconds, beating the human world record by more than 6 minutes. Once they unleash the robots on us, Parker, even the fastest among us will not be able to outrun them. Oh. A guy like me, that robot is taking me down like a panther and a gazelle in about 4.6 seconds.
Okay. But did you also see the video of, I believe, another robot tripping over one of those like little ramps that they put the cords underneath?
No, I didn't see that one.
I saw one of those the other day too, and it just a little dink tripped, totally shattered when it hit
the
ground.
That makes me happy.
Yes.
I don't want, but you watched the video of this robot running, right?
Yes, it is a little jarring.
It's very creepy because it looks like something out of Star Wars. It's got it's not like a humanoid robot. It's a robot robot. You know, this is not a person. It's not, you know, a skin job like in Blade Runner. This is a straight up crazy Revenge of the Clones kind of robot.
Oh.
The pointy arms that just pump and it comes at you. It's like when Robert Patrick in The Terminator turned to all metal and the skin fell away and he just came after him. And that thing was flat. Now, granted, they had it on its own side of the, like in its own lane.
Okay.
And I'm sure everything had been cleared out so it didn't trip like you're in your example, Parker.
Yeah.
But the fact that it still went that far, according to this company, this is a big stride for them. And it is it's a technological rival, China, you know, with the U.S. Now, you got to wonder if the administration is watching this. The problem is the administration would get involved in robotic technology and want this, flocked in gold with, they'd want the robot to have a comb over. Oh. It would be less aerodynamic.
Gold robots. That's an idea.
Gold robots. Listen, when the robots finally do take over, the ruling class of robot will be made of gold.
Well, and they'll be so shiny. They'll be so shiny when you look at them, you'll have to avert your eyes.
You will, but don't, because gold is a soft metal. And that's who you take out first.
They're weak. I see.
Take out their leaders. It's not like I'm making plans all day, but I'm making plans all night.
You're thinking about this robot uprising a lot, aren't you?
Well, you know, there was that thing that a lot of people think about the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
That's in the past.
That's yours.
I don't worry about that. I'm thinking about the robot empire. That's coming. And right now, I don't know what skills do I have for our robot overlords to keep me. They're not going to be well-versed in sarcasm or pettiness, which are my stocks in trade. So I don't know if the robots would keep me. Well, last year, Beijing hosted the world's first humanoid robot games, which put machines through their paces in soccer, boxing, martial arts, and sports. More than 100 teams took place in the half marathon on Sunday. It was a humanoid half marathon that was five times as many as last year when the contest debuted, but delivered mainly disappointing performances by the robots. And you know those Chinese scientists and robotics experts do not want to be disappointed. So they went to work on Lightning, and Lightning did deliver. A 2023 policy document, officials identified humanoid robotics as a new frontier in technological competition, setting a 2025 target for mass production and secure supply chain for core components. Oh, man. How long before, you know, there was the whole big thing about trans athletes. Just wait till we now have to worry about robotic. And I had no problem with trans athletes competing. I don't want robots competing, though.
Oh, no.
I don't want them competing at all.
No. They worry me. They do worry.
Well, they should worry you, Parker.
Yeah, a little bit.
We have jobs that robots, you know, if you're in a job that a robot could do, you should be really worried.
Yeah.
I don't know if a robot could do this, my job, yet. They will be. The AI could probably do it. Yeah, they could just listen to all my old tapes and put together some gibberish, and all of a sudden you'd never know if I was gone. I may not be here now.
That's true.
This may be an AI projection of what's happening. You never know anymore. I'm a deep fake, Parker. That's all I am.
I only did meet you the one time. Maybe they hired an actor.
That's right. And then they created this image from that actor.
Yeah.
And I'm actually a 3 foot tall woman. Never know. We'll find out that more coming up. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Daybreak. It is 8:35. We're in the home stretch of the big broadcast. Glad you're with us. 855-75-CIVIC is how you get a hold of us when you call in. Be nice to Parker. You can also keep up with us on our Instagram and Facebook pages, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. Download the free Civic Media app or just go to the civicmedia.us website and you can listen to all our past shows. Man, we are accessible. Here's a question for you. How do you want how would you like the White House correspondents to react when they're dealing with lies that they hear either from the president or Caroline Leavitt or anybody else in the administration? And I'll tell you why I'm wondering that from you. But first, we want to, Mr. Plower, we were talking about these robots. And in the show within a show, we were hypothesizing, Parker and I, about what the future use of, once you make a robot that runs really fast, what do you do with it? And I posited that most great technology somehow ends up in the hands of the military, and sometimes for good, sometimes for questionable reasons. But in my future, instead of sending men and women into battle, you will have these robots strapped with or equipped with some sort of weaponry and then guided like they guide a drone and go in. Now, well, there will always be need for human people in the service, but, you know, easier to send a robot in to a horrible situation than a woman. And then Mr. Plow King jumps in on the social. He's on watching on the stream. He says, my company works with a group that makes AI-powered guns to take out the drones. That's one more level of Star Wars that we did. Look up Bullfrog M134. Parker?
So I'm looking at it.
Yeah, what is it?
It's actually less concerning than I was afraid of it being.
Okay.
It does just look like a gun, like a turret, basically. But yeah, it is a little odd to see no handles or anything for someone to hold on to shoot. It is very clearly shooting itself.
It's mounted on something else?
Yeah, it looks like it should be, yeah. I guess maybe you could
remote
control it.
Maybe it put that on the head of the robots.
Maybe. Oh. Maybe.
And the robots can be dispersed everywhere to take out the drones.
You never know.
We're living in chapter, chapter 4 was the original Star Wars movie?
Yes.
We're living in like the prologue to all of it.
We are. I really do feel like Ron Naboo and all those droids are coming out of the transports. They're setting up. They're coming after us. I don't know, Brian.
And if you think we're crazy, just hang on. They thought Edison was crazy, too. They thought we'd never make it to the moon.
That's well, right. Did we?
All right, listen. Yes, we did.
All right, fine. We
Don't
made it to the
start
moon.
That.
I'm making
oh,
sure.
Oh, man, oh, man. Hey. Here we go. Johnny Conspiracy, making me look rational. That's dangerous. But listen, if it does happen, if we didn't go to the moon, I want journalists to tell me about it. I want somebody to dig. I want there to be, and of course we went to the moon. Don't take that. Don't make that the takeaway from what I'm about to say. Did you just say we didn't go to the moon? No. What I'm saying is I want journalists to be journalists. I want journalists to ask the hard questions. I want journalists to confront lies. That's the one place I really would like to make America great again. Is journalism. When journalists were trusted, when they were the voice of responsibility, and you could argue, well, there was always a slight edge or a slight lean in editorial content, and I would agree with you on that, but I would also say overall in the past, there were journalists who were not afraid to take on an administration, not afraid to speak truth to power and really hold people's feet to the fire. And some of those older journalists are bearing this out and coming out and speaking out against it. More than 250 journalists, including 94-year-old former news anchor Dan Rather and 92-year-old former ABC news anchor Sam Donaldson, who could be one of the most serious men I have ever witnessed. There never seemed to be a moment where Sam Donaldson was having a good time. He was all about the news and nothing but the news. And if you didn't like the news, trust me, he didn't like having to deliver that news, but he did, and he did it well. Well, they signed an open letter yesterday urging the press to, quote, forcefully demonstrate opposition, end quote, to President Trump during the White House Correspondents Association dinner this week. Now, you may have heard of the White House Correspondents dinner before. It is a it's a big dinner, and usually they have a famous comedian, and it's all of the people who cover the White House, and they would get together. Well, that's not happening. So part of this letter said, we, the undersigned, call upon the White House Correspondents Association to use the occasion of the White House Correspondents Dinner to forcefully demonstrate opposition to President Trump's efforts to trample freedom of the press. Now, I'm going to read part of the letter because I think it's important. As I read it yesterday, and even if you're one of those people who don't trust journalists and who don't trust the media because you don't, and you want to get your information from some independent journalists, and that's fine if you get your information. But there was a time, Parker, and it wasn't all that long ago, that journalists were held in high regard. And there was a responsibility that they felt to get you the story. And there are still people like that in the industry. We've talked to some. We all know some. We all have people that we trust. We've talked about this before. But overall, the trust has been eroded, and that's what this letter is about. So this is part of the open letter. Quote, the dinner has long served as a symbol of the vital and irreplaceable role of a free press in American democracy and a celebration of the First Amendment and the journalists who uphold it. President Trump's systematic, sustained, and unprecedented attacks on the free press render his presence at such an event a profound contradiction of its purpose. The collective weight of the administration's actions, retaliatory access bans, coercive regulatory investigations, frivolous lawsuits against the press, defunding of public broadcasting, dismantling of international broadcasting, physical restrictions on journalists, personal verbal attacks on reporters, assaults on the media in official White House press releases and social media posts, the arrests of journalists and the pardoning of those who committed violence against the press represent the most systematic and comprehensive assault on freedom of the press by a sitting American president. Speaking forcefully in front of the man who seeks to undermine our country's long tradition is an independent, strong, free press's responsibility. We also urge the WHC to reaffirm without equivocation that freedom of the press is not a partisan issue and that the association will not normalize this behavior, but instead fight back against any office holder who has waged systematic war against the journalists whose work the dinner celebrates. All right. So in that being said, what is the proper action then? Do you boycott it? Do you stay away? Because you're not going to get, here's the thing, you're not going to get all the journalists to stay away. The right-wing journalists that have gotten preferential treatment now in the press room, the ones who stayed at the Pentagon even after Pete Hegseth was demanding that journalists sign basically a loyalty oath, and most mainstream journalists walked out of the Pentagon and gave up their credentials. Those people are going to be at this dinner. And then you know what will happen. The president will use that as an excuse to further his whining that the press is against him, that he doesn't get a fair shot, that all the press wants to do is report falsehoods and criticisms, and he will declare it the best correspondence dinner ever because there wasn't some comedian who made jokes about him. And if you remember, Trump's whole MO stems from a joke that Barack Obama made at the correspondence dinner years ago. One joke. And it all started this. And that's why he has such a bee in his bonnet about Barack Obama and anything Barack Obama did. And that's when it started showing how thin-skinned he was. So the letter that I read part of to you went on to list 22 more examples of the Trump administration's attacks on the freedom of the press. Prominent signatures on this letter. I mentioned Dan Rather and Sam Donaldson earlier, former Dateline NBC anchor Ann Curry, former NBC host Bob Dotson, former ABC News correspondent and Obama official Linda Douglas, and PBS NewsHour host Stephanie Tsai. So all of these people are saying this, but what do you think? Are we at the point where it's too late? How do you think they should really react? They don't really outline what they want them to do at the correspondents' dinner other than stand up to what the president is doing, but how? And I guess that's going to be left to the people who read the letter and to the news organizations. But if we're thinking down the road, unfortunately, I don't believe that's going to happen. We have seen recently a few more reporters push the president on his answers. But like in the Oval Office the other day, as soon as he doesn't like a question, he dismisses the entire press corps. And he did it with just a wave of his hand like he's an emperor. Somebody asked a question about something that was going on in Iran. He didn't like the question. He just waved them and went, out, everybody out. No, you're the president. You're responsible for answering these questions. That's part of the deal. You got to stay there and take it. We've also seen in the press room, Caroline Leavitt publicly dressed down any reporter that dares question the veracity of a statement or dares to question something that goes against the party line. So all of that being said, news organizations still thrive on access. And unless you can reach some sort of agreement with one news organization or create a pool that is going to feed news to these organizations that do stand up and do get thrown out, I don't know how you make that stand and still have access, because the worst thing for this country would be for there to be no access by any media outlet other than the ones that have already acquiesced, bowed down, the far right-wing media networks, and I use the term loosely, that are already kowtowing to everything the president says, the true believers. The worst thing would be to let that operate in darkness and to not have anybody saying that the emperor has no clothes or asking the emperor why he is doing what he's doing or the emperor's representatives asking and then holding them to it and pushing back. And I've been happy to see more people push back. Caitlin Collins is a great example with CNN. She does not care one way or another. And that's, this is what journalists, they didn't care about being friendly. They knew their job was not to be friends with the press secretary or friends with the administration. Their job was to report on that. And I think if more reporters embrace that, we would be a lot better off. You're never going to be friends with Caroline Leavitt. You're never going to be friends with this president. It's not your job. Your job is to get the story. Tell us what's happening. We want to know. We want to know the details. We want to know what they actually think. So you got to do that. It'll be interesting to see what happens this week at the Correspondents' Dinner. I've always enjoyed watching the monologues from the various comics. I've always enjoyed people complaining that they were too mean. It's like, why do you hire the court jester? The court jester's job is to point out how stupid everybody is. And that's when you hire a comic, you're bringing in a court jester. They may be in a tuxedo instead of the crazy hat, but take my word for it, they're still a court jester. On the other side, we're going to try to leave the show with an upbeat note. Will it be completely happy and upbeat? Probably not. But will there be anything you can hang your hope on as you continue the rest of the day? Yes, there will be. I promise you, we will leave you with at least some sort of good feeling. Man, and that's getting tough. It's Daybreak.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
A few more minutes before we head out the door and make room for all the other great programming on the network. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak. What would you do, rather, if you found yourself in a dangerous encounter with a wild animal? Maybe you've done it. We'd love to hear that story. Or if you're theorizing, wow, if I was in this situation that I'm about to describe to you, I would have done things differently. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You might have heard this story already. When I saw the video that accompanied this story, I really freaked out a little bit. Carson Bender is 19. He lives in Wisconsin Rapids, and he loves to hunt. He loves to hunt deer. He loves to hunt turkey. This time, though, Parker, the hunter became the hunted.
Oh, no.
That's right. So he did an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel where he released, and they had the video too. So he got up on April 18th to go turkey hunting. He was really, oh man, he got up early. He found his nice spot. He placed out two turkey decoys. He was in a field on the edge of a small woods near this hay field. He was dressed head to toe in camouflage. He also had his face mask on. He said he heard squawking in the woods and it went silent. Then he saw some turkeys. Oh, my gosh. He was like, this is it. And he's sitting there. He didn't want to make any noise because he thought he would spook the turkeys. So he raised his phone, turned on the reverse camera into video mode. He was going to videotape these turkeys. To his surprise, once the camera lens was facing him, over his shoulder, a bobcat. Yes, and not a bobcat in the distance, a bobcat right up on him. You got to see this video. So bobcats, which first of all, bobcats are the most abundant native wildcat in Wisconsin. They can be found in all 72 counties. And you're saying, Brian, I've never seen a bobcat. Well, of course you haven't, because they are sneaky. You don't see them often. They get its name from their short black tip tail. The coat is variable, though generally it's tan to grayish-brown with black streaks and spots. Attacks by bobcats on humans are extremely rare, unless, of course, you're sitting turkey hunting and a bobcat is literally stalking you, which is what this bobcat was doing. When our man Carson saw the bobcat in his phone, oh my goodness, he said, I was like, uh-oh. But I was still locked in on the turkeys. That's a dedicated hunter.
Listen,
I got a couple turkeys in my sights. This bobcat's going to have to wait its turn. Well, okay. So when I first watched the video, it appeared to me, and it appears to most people in this video, that it's fake. Because the bobcat doesn't move. The bobcat is standing perfectly still, just staring at the back of this guy's neck. Waiting. So, all of a sudden, though, the bobcat lifts its paw and slowly, very stealthily, starts moving toward Bender. Yes, just like Parker is doing. Slower, Parker. Slower. Staring the whole time. So, Bender, still in shock. He said, I knew where the bobcat was, and I didn't know what I would do. But I was actually just about to take the shot at the turkey. At this point, dude, turn around and hit that bobcat with the butt of your gun. You're going to worry about a turkey? Go to Piggly Wiggly and pick up a turkey tomorrow. Turkeys are abundant. A bobcat creeping up on you, it should raise some alarms. It should make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, because adult bobcats in Wisconsin mostly range from 20 to 30 pounds, some top 40 pounds. They're typically about 28 to 47 inches long, including their 4 to 6 inch bobbed tail, and they stand about 12 to 24 inches tall at the shoulder. Look at me weaving in bobcat information to make the story even more dramatic.
Excellent.
Okay. Now, before he could shoot, again, he's focused. He knows there's a bobcat. He's focused on shooting the turkey. Well, before he could shoot, the bobcat made its move. It lunged at Bender, striking his left arm with a paw or paws. He shook off the bobcat, which he estimated weighed about 25 pounds, and it ran away. Now, the turkeys, because turkeys are notoriously not smart, they remained in the area, and a few minutes later, he got a shot off at one of the mature toms. He missed.
Oh.
All of that, and he missed.
Dude.
He said in the interview with the Journal Sentinel, "I think I was a little amped up from the bobcat encounter." You think? Is that right? Holy cow. He was a trophy-winning trap shooter on his high school team, so he usually doesn't miss a big turkey. The good news for Carson Bender, not seriously injured from the bobcat attack, and because, as we've mentioned, he seems to be more dedicated, really, to hunting turkey than his own safety. He was back the same spot the next morning looking to get another turkey. No word on if he got a turkey that next day. No word on if the bobcat came back. No word on the bobcat at all, except that it had it. You got to take your shot. If you're coming for the king, you better get the job done. And in this case, man is king, and the bobcat is the one who's coming at it. Can you imagine? All right, Parker.
Oh, boy.
Let's put ourselves in this situation.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, and you're turkey hunting.
Sure.
You're all ready, but then you realize there's a bobcat behind you.
Yeah.
Would you do what Chad Bender or Carson Bender did and just sit there and go, "I got to get this turkey"?
I think what I'm doing is I'm just, like, slowly turning to look at the turkey. Or not the turkey, the bobcat.
I was going to say.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm already looking at the turkey. I turn to look at the bobcat very slowly, and I see if we can go eye to eye. I would like to do a staring contest with the bobcat.
Is that more dangerous, though?
I don't know.
I don't know. A lot of wild animals, if you look them in the eye, that's a sign of aggression.
It could be. I don't know. But I would like to do a stare down with the bobcat.
I'm just going to make noise and make that thing run away. And I have a gun, so I should not.
That's
I'm not
true.
Turning to kill it just because. But if it lunges at me, I'm hitting it, doubt about it.
Are you allowed to kill the bobcat? Is that legal in Wisconsin? Maybe for self-defense. Probably for self-defense.
That's another question for another day, because really, we're done now. We don't have time to answer that scintillating question. But we'll be back tomorrow with more scintillating questions and topics. Thank you for listening and being part of the show. We will talk to you again tomorrow. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.